Hi.
Hello.
You are Brooke.
Takla Haymanut.
You came to Orville a few years back, yeah?
Yes.
When was that?
That was in back in 2006.
Hmm.
October 2006.
And what was the reason?
The reason was the a couple of guys came into our school, and then they stayed in Ethiopia, and then they stayed in Oroville, I think, for 3 or 4 months, and then they wanted to do the African Pavilion project in the international zone, and then they thought that maybe it's good to involve students in this field, and then probably arrange a competition, a student competition.
That was a competition.
There was a competition amongst the class. And then so they came back with the project, and then they presented the competition to the students. So probably half of the class maybe was interested, and then a few chose it as their thesis project, as a competition. And then I did it for half a semester or for a semester, and then there was a jury, open jury by the faculty. So my project was chosen. Amongst the other projects, so I was given a chance to come to Oroville and then present this project to Orovillians and the public in Oroville.
But before that, you ever heard about Oroville?
No, I've never heard about Oroville until the two ambassadors came, and then that was when I started to do some research about Orville.
So, if I understood correct, you basically designed the model before you came to the Orville.
Yes, yes.
So, what you were working on? I mean, this
The material was, of course, we need some technical data to design the place, and then the two guys they brought GIS information about Orville, about the topography. And then they also brought with them movies and other material, so that we kind of catch the abstract nature of the area. I mean, the nature that you cannot really, the non-physical aspects. Mm. So that was given to me and to my colleagues through movies, books, and the like.
And when you came there, I mean, if you think about it, what was
The first reaction?
Yeah, I mean, like, what is the reality?
It was a shock.
Reality to what?
It was a shock. I was shocked. Yeah, because on my mind I had always pictures of the galaxy, and the white city, and then when I was driving with the taxi from Chennai into Oroville, and then the taxi driver told me, "Now we're in Oroville," and then but I said, "No, we're not yet." I thought he was going to take me somewhere. So I told him, "Take me to Oroville."
And then he expected that the galaxy is already
at least half of it, or at least quarter of it, you know. And then I was suddenly into the midst of a big forest, and I couldn't see even more than probably 20-30 meters, you know. Helmut, the architect who was kind of facilitating my trip, he told me, "Well, Brooke, this is Oroville, and then get used to it." So that was the first impression.
Okay, after that?
After
that you probably see some buildings.
Yeah, right? After that I saw some buildings in the midst of forests, and then I also went into the city hall and then understood what was built, what was unbuilt, what belonged to Oroville, and then also what belonged to the other villages, to the Tamil villages. So I had a clear idea about the mapping. And then the next thing to get used to was how the community lived. It was very strange for me. Strange in a sense that I expected, you know, I had a city in my mind, but suddenly there is a village with an urban character. It's also very urban because there is a city hall. There are also
scattered places.
Yeah, scattered places. So there is also community. Yeah, so it was something in between. Not a city, not a village, you know, something, a hybrid. Yeah, but so that was very interesting.
Village with the urban character.
Yeah. And then after that, maybe again after I got used to it, I started to talk with different communities, and then I understood that there were again different school of thoughts in Oroville. For me, it was interesting, kind of. I also had a session with the dream catchers in the roof of
on the Mitra.
On the city hall also.
On the city hall.
With the 4 or 5 people, you wake up very early morning.
And you do that.
And then you do that. And it was really... But the best part for me was the discussions going on. They could be endless, the discussions sometimes. Mm-hmm. They're very endless and so without any decisions.
Decisions are really...
Hard to decide. But the interaction is good. At least people are in a motion of... speaking with each other and talking.
Putting it out, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think about the international zone?
The international zone, again, in relation to what I just said, right now it was
plans
I
was
the plans to, yeah well, because I was always present in all the meetings of the international zone, and then until recently they were sending me also the meeting minutes until 3 years back actually. Mm-hmm. After that they stopped sending me the minutes, but even when I came back from Oroville I was being updated of what was happening in the international zone. And then also international zone, there were wonderful ideas but sometimes conflicting, and then also very difficult to make decisions, especially with the European Pavilion. I was involved in a lot of discussions, trying to make things. For me, I'm the kind of guy who's used to deciding on something and then just building it, as an architect. I like to build because I'm taught to build, and then there are discussions going on.
Yeah, because you have something given to us and you have to develop it. It's different.
It's different. That's what's different.
You saw the mother's ideas about that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You think they make sense?
They do. Probably, I'm not really that much knowledgeable about the mother's things, but I have read some of her books, and then what I think is, she laid down the basic principles for the city, but principles, I take them as principles, which are very interesting and then also very true.
And also
quite flexible. So it's up to the group to take these principles and then adapt them to the existing reality. I think that's how planning works, because in the 1950s, during the era of Le Corbusier, there used to be the master plan thinking that something is done by one person and then you implement it. But planning also has to do with time. Things change. So as long as you respect the principles, I think things should move on. I was quite amazed by Roger's work. I was quite amazed. But again, I think that we live for today. I mean, things should start going and keep going, as long as we're all in the same kind of ideals. Because it's always somebody, some architect once upon a time said that it's always, you don't really plan a city. You think about it, it grows, yeah. It just grows,
yeah, who said that?
I think it's maybe Daniel Libeskind who said you don't draw a city. You can draw a piece of architecture because it belongs to one person, but a city belongs to a community. So it's difficult to draw it, because there is this concept of time involved, and then as time goes by, realities also change. But this, what I say has nothing to do with, it's not against what the mother says, because I think reading her books, she's very quite open into things. Mm. And then I think her principles are also very, very open. And then,
so if you think that true. Way, you think the African Pavilion will happen next 10 years?
The project being very close to my heart, I still believe. I believe in the project, and then I think that it would take time. Of course, considering the current reality in Oroville, it would take time. But one day, I believe that it's going to be built.
I think that also the project itself, because the Africa is actually the hugest continent, it does can bring some kind of unity, or we can the African unity can be manifested while building in pavilion and maybe with activities there.
Sure, the thing that I believe in most is that. Forgetting the physical fabric of architecture, there is the social fabric. Also the programs, what happens inside the building. So the spaces, they might be good or they might be bad, But what's most important is what happens in those spaces.
What we will do with them.
What we will do with them in the activities. So as long as these activities are kind of really in line with the ideals of Oroville, then I think it why not? I mean, it's, you know, it's...
Yeah. Do you have any idea why there are not Africans really present in Oroville? Or maybe you have an idea what is the setback that Africans not coming to?
Yeah, I think I also noticed it, but simply I think that the reason is very simple. It's very logical, because the start of Oroville in the 1960s was when, you know, there was a lot of trouble in Europe, and then at that time in Africa it was an era of colonization. So the issues in Africa at that time and then the issues in Europe were kind of different. So if, for example, you come to Oroville, mm-hmm. and then people around you or people who are in lineage around you will probably know about Oroville. They're more involved and more aware about you because you came there first. For example, Takasta came there, mm-hmm. and then people around Takasta or people who know Takasta will be better informed about it. So it's, I think it's about information, because in Africa, if you even talk about websites and computers, what proportion of people will really be aware, you know? In Europe and in other parts, it's also in the age of information. People are more aware.
Also in Africa, you know, yesterday we were traveling through and there were mud huts. They had the satellite dish.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, I am a perfect example for this. Me, I being educated here, I consider myself to be very near into information. But when in the university days, it was my final year in the university, I have never heard a single word about Oroville. So that was the first time. And then taking another ruler person in Ethiopia, I'm sure he will not be informed. So it's all about information.
Alex Selassie knew about it.
Yeah.
And you think that maybe because of Takeshita got the idea to bring the vocational center there, you think that might be more...
It's very relevant.
Boost the Africans to come there.
It would. Not only that, I mean, me and Malak Asalam, we went to Oroville, we came back here, and then Malak also had a training in the Earth Institute. And then after here in the university, after we built the project, the Sudu project, a lot of people start, you know, looking at the project and then asking questions. They ask, how did you bring the technology? What came up? What, you know, they ask the details, and then Oroville comes up. You know, also through this transfer of technology, people ask, they get informed, and then it goes on like that.
So we can hope for next 30 volunteers to come from these classes.
Sure.
They're upstairs now.
Sure. My students have been asking me after we posted the posters. They've been asking me, where is Oroville? What is there? Every time I get phone calls, and then in the corridors, they stop me and then ask me, how can we go? What's there? It's really a cool idea and things like that. So I believe... it's also about, you know, promoting the city and things like that.
Even things.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts for the...
One thing that's going back to the Africa House, Helmut, the architect, once told me that they did a fundraising in Korea, and then they made this very famous singer perform. Maybe it was in South Korea, and then she was actually doing it for like a fundraising project for Oroville, but she was very famous. Mm-hmm. And then after her musical performance, a lot of Koreans came. What was interesting for me was that opened the eyes to many people. There was information flowing on. So, I mean, this is the start. And then here also in the African Pavilion, if there is a certain event like this that could really open eyes of people, then money would come out and it would flow. Probably the challenge in our case, it would be the governments in Africa have other priorities right now, other priorities which probably are not more important than what we're talking about, but considering the circumstances, it would be difficult to really convince them that you know they allocate money for
Really, but you know, the corruption is high, and the things we all know that the aid money is going to some people's pocket, not the people who need it.
That's so how our world works.
What if we go and do the fundraising with these some people who got the palace with golden walls? That will work.
We can try that. We can try that.
Funny thing is that we all know the money is, you know, there's enough money on the planet, and it's also
it's all about distribution.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in Africa we have a lot of problems, and then the problems are so many and so much that you can't filter out and then kind of have a chance to solve them. The thing is, for us, I personally believe that it's also more efficient to involve the African Union, because the African Union is a collection of the African governments, which are part of the AU, the African Union. And then, because this is not about
There are two or what?
There is one African Union.
It's only one.
And then this was the ideal where Haile Selassie and Nkrumah and all the others were, you know, trying to promote. And then it exists now because of these people. And I believe that if the AU buys the idea of Oroville and then what Oroville stands for as an ideal, then that would be the perfect strategy to have AU on our side, also in sponsoring and then supporting the African House in Oroville.
So Africans should go present the idea to African Unity, AU?
Because it will play a very big role. It's a big union with a lot of funds. Also, probably all the member states, they support this AU. And then if AU supports it, it means all the member states have also supported
it. But not all the countries of Africa are not in the
Most union. Are. But most are. Almost all are, actually. Mm. Yeah, except 3 or 4 countries. Mm. The majority are part of the AU. And then the AU started not as just an association, but it started the idea was as a Pan-Africanist movement, the movement to see Africa as one big state, like a collection of countries. That was the ideal. So I think that also talking about the human unity in Oroville, you know, it's the AU also can play a very big role in this.
Yeah, we didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the Chinese?
Yeah, what about them?
They bought the African fertile land.
Oh, you mean coming here to Africa?
Besides what the Europeans did, you know, and they're still holding the resources. That's the fact.
Sure.
Now you've got another neo-colonialism in the shape of Chinese.
Mm-hmm. This
is going to be also a big burden.
This is a big issue. I mean, I will try to see this in two terms. First, it's not only the Chinese, but there are also other Arab countries who are coming here and then buying land and things like that. But it's they say that the devil lies in the details. It also depends how you deal with these companies, because some Chinese are probably development partners in some cases. Probably in the majorities, they come for resources and then for kind of dumping labor and things like that into the continent.
So there's no way that you can stop.
There's no way. And then it's not only the circle. If we look at the bigger circle, it's not only the Chinese, because it's also the pressure of the IMF and other World Trade Organizations who have pressures on African governments, and then African governments have to kind of really find ways of trying to meet these goals set by these institutions. So they turn into these other alternatives of bringing in Chinese companies and then also selling in land. So it's kind of a vicious circle connected not only to the Chinese, coming of the Chinese, but to other world institutions. So it's all a game which is a difficult matrix, and Africa has a challenge to break through.
Besides Ethiopia, actually, you guys were the only who stand up toward. I mean, you didn't allow to be colonized,
mm-hmm.
But the Chinese are coming.
Yeah, one thing I can also tell you is that I have been to also a lot of other parts of the world, and then one thing I can tell you is that the Chinese are not only coming to Africa, but to other. But yeah, I think
most
the solution.
Of the countries in Europe, they got like, it's a kind of law. Mm-hmm. Especially in my country, because it's really small, the people from outside, they cannot buy the piece of land.
Yeah.
So you have to go either through a person who is Slovenian, but we are so small that it can't really work.
Yeah, I know. I
don't know if you got any law that foreign people shouldn't buy the land, that you can just maybe lease it or something, you know?
Yeah, there are different laws also not only for the Chinese, but for foreigners, for example. Foreigners are allowed in manufacturing, but not in retail, so that they don't kick off the local, local merchants out of business. But I think, I would be careful not to blame or point fingers on the Chinese, because I think the sickness is on the system, on the overall system that we have in the world.
Yes.
And it manifests itself in this kind of scenarios, I believe.
The average man doesn't know what's going on. Right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, even the average African, what he's looking for, he's just looking to survive to have money.
Yeah, so maybe probably 70 or 80% of the world population, they are followers. They follow.
Unfortunately.
Probably 20
are slaves,
30. Yeah.
Slaves of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. So we're going to see you in Orwell hopefully soon.
Especially if you sponsor my trip, and then if you let me come there and build the Africa house, I'll be very glad to help out, as long as I have something to eat and then a roof on top of my head.
As you said, we're supposed to go to AU to get us, maybe let's plan that.
Sure, would be more than happy.
Thanks.
All right.
Anti-Sweetness, Anti-Sweetness, Yagere.